There's a movement happening. Some call it Reformation. Others call it Holy Discontent. We call it the Resistance. Traditions and harmful teachings have kept the bride captive for centuries. We will explore these systems and contrast them with God's design. Join us as we discuss God's patterns for life, ministry, and most importantly, His church. We will do this with scripture, testimony, music, and satire. We are resisting the system and embracing the design. We are the Resistance.
So here's what we're going to do. The first hour, we talked about gospel. Which gospel are you under? The one that transforms and leads you into a group of people, a body of believers, and the works that Jesus designed for us to do? Or are you in the one that still has you trying to figure out you and God, that yeah. personal gospel of repentance? Well, the gospel that I received was that personal Savior gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think over time, though, I realized that that was not a fulfilling gospel. And there was more that was out there, and I longed for that more. And then finding that other gospel, the real gospel of the big picture of what God's doing, caused me to decide to quit my job, turn in my ordination, leave the traditional church, leave the employment, give up my house, move to the inner city, and decide to do something. So why would I do that? Why would I give up all of that and go just because of the gospel?
It was nuts.
No, it was because God gave me a vision. And in that vision, which came in multiple different ways of communication, people always ask me, well, how did he communicate it to you? Well, there was a lot of different ways. Some of it was audible. Some of it was visual. Some of it was prompting that led me to discovery. Some of it was scripture.
See, people don't necessarily talk in those terms if you were discussing something concerning your wife. Like, oh, my wife loves me, or oh, I know my wife is this way.
They, how do you know?
Like, well, how do you know? How exactly did she? It's like tell people you. Like, oh, well, of course you know, because she's your wife. You communicate. You live together. You love each other, right?
She shows me in all kinds of different ways. Sometimes she smacks me upside the head. Sometimes she does something really nice for me. Sometimes it's with touch. Sometimes it's with words. And God does the same thing.
I'm laughing because I know she's at home with my wife and my kids listening.
And they're both looking at each other going, yep, that's how we do it. Okay, so not so much the smacking upside the head thing.
Yes, it is.
She's been really nice to me lately. She has. I don't know what's gotten into her. Could be the age, my age, that she's worried about. I think I'm too frail now.
That's just be nice to you now. He's not so that anyway, crazy wild mountain man anymore.
So we got that 5-year plan thing, and God said, you know, you're going to go, and did it through Isaiah 61, those passages Mark read earlier, and he's like, you're going to go, and you're going to do what I did. You're going to help people who are oppressed, who are downtrodden, who need help. That's what you're going to do, and here's how you're going to do it. And he showed me three different things that we were going to do in that vision. And one is that he first of all stressed the importance to me of work, because work is important. Mm-hmm. It's one of the first things that God did with Adam was give him a job. Name the animals, tend the garden. He had something to do, brings purpose and meaning into life when we have meaningful work to do. So he told me we had to create opportunity for meaningful work. Yep. And we called that the Opportunity Center. And then he told me that we have to be able to lead people and train them in this new old way of thinking, this gospel that's been lost and covered and hidden, and this thing that God's about to do in the inner cities of America. He said, you're going to have to be able to train and lead, so we call that the Leadership Center. That was component number two. And then he talked about this pathway leading to restoration with him that involved housing, people needing a place to live, and we call that the Narrow Gate. So those were the three components that were in the plan from the beginning. And at that point, I was just like telling people, this is what we're going to do. That's when I was a crazy man, if you remember back in that day. Hey, what are you going to do down here? Oh, we're going to leave the suburbs and move to this inner city neighborhood, and we're going to do all this stuff. Really, how are you going to do that? I don't know. God said, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Yeah, it's not like there was like a fat wad of cash or, a pre-existing facility or, I mean, while there was a plan, it wasn't like it was all like, well, nope. Here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, here's the formula and whatnot, here's how you do it. It was just people trying to follow God being done with their really empty lives.
There was just, there was no money, actually. We were dead broke in the beginning, and we were praying about where we were supposed to go, and my wife and I would drive down into the city and God was moving through both of us, and he was confirming to me through her the things that were going to happen, and that, you know, she was seeing things and spiritually and physically that were moving and meaningful and communicating to us God's heart and how he felt about the area and the people and the things that were going on. And I don't know that we fully grasped at that time the complete context. I'm not even sure we grasped the complete context now, but it gets clearer every year, seeing it the way that God sees it, especially in light of everything that's been going on with Ferguson and Baltimore and the other areas. Starting to understand better now what God was doing by getting us here and preparing us for this ahead of time. But we ended up, you know, in Hyde Park, and I didn't want to go to Hyde Park because, you know, that was 2009, and it was pretty much a war zone up there. I mean, there was a lot of people shooting each other in Hyde Park at that time. And, you know, we got a building donated to us, which had a wood shop in it. And it was like, well, that's one of the things we thought we were supposed to do with the Opportunity Center. So it was like, okay, that's pretty confirming. Got a building donated. It's got a wood shop in it, or part of the best, you know, part making of a wood shop in it. Some of the equipment and tools were there. And the first 8 months we were in that building, 12 people were shot and killed within 4 blocks of that building. So I was definitely reconsidering my commitment to live the gospel unto death.
Right.
Because it was now much more of a reality than when I lived in the suburbs.
Well, I think that's important. Just like, so again, it's not like we were like, oh, let's look for those works. Let's do the works. Let's whatever. It's like understanding that those existed, but it's like, let's follow God. And it's not like we were prepared.
Oh, no
like,
way.
We didn't know. I mean, it's still, God's been teaching us every day, sometimes through very hard things for the past, you know, come up on 6 years now, how to do what we're doing, because he's like, okay, that's great. You guys have all your ideas and all your whatever, but get rid of that because I'm doing something and you need to do it, not your own deal.
Right.
So we weren't like super hot shots that had all kinds of experience. We didn't know what we were doing. And he's like, just come on.
No. And at that time, you and Mark were roommates.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we were.
And my daughter Amy was living at home still. And you guys gave up your house because you had a third roommate, which was my other son who was right. getting married. You guys gave up your house so that the married couple could keep the cheap rent.
It was a really good deal.
Yeah, it was. And you guys moved into our basement at this time. Yes, when then we said, hey, we're leaving. And I remember you were working at Picasso's and you were working at
IGA. In the deli.
Yeah. Woo! And I was working at C. Bennett, and I told them already I was leaving and going. And they're like, oh, you know, we love crazy people. Go ahead. So I did, and then all of a sudden it's like everybody's like, well, you know, we're in. We want to do this thing. You know, if that's what we're doing that. And you guys all gave up as much as I gave up to go do that, just in different ways. And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to do this next song, and then we're going to come back and talk about this founding of the Opportunity Center, how we all got interaction together and working together and got this core group of people that just said, hey, we're all in. We're going to this place and do this. Going to go live in this warehouse, basically.
Yeah.
What we did.
The song is by Brandon Heath, and it's called Give Me Your Eyes. And it's been out for a long time, but I remember listening to it a lot when we first started doing it. It was played a lot on the radio at that time also. But it's just...
Especially on my wife's radio.
Yeah.
Whatever she had, she was playing it a lot. Because that was the thing. She kept saying, God, show me what you see.
Right. And that's basically all he's saying. And he's talking about all these broken people. And I think it's still something that you have to every day. You have to get outside yourself and say, God, show me your heart for these people. Show me whatever it is. Change me so that I am compassionate and I am selfless. And I am wanting to do the things that you're wanting to do.
And show me what you see. Let's go to the song.
Hey, welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network. So before we went to the song, I was going to say something, but I decided just to say it after the song anyway. so the song basically talks about us wanting to see what God sees, giving us his eyes for the world. And just, I don't know if it's a warning or an encouragement, it could be both, but when you pray that, pray it with a willing and humble heart, because you will be crushed. I believe wholeheartedly that God weeps when he looks at the world. Mm-hmm. And like, that's part of my motivation. Like every day it's like, I look at what God sees and sometimes I literally weep, but every day it's like my heart's broken for people who are taken advantage of or who are beaten down or whatever.
Were you just talking about your buddy you met when you were out in St. Charles?
Yeah, so I'm hanging out in St. Charles today for a little bit and ran into a guy who loosely connected friend of the family for a very long time. He was in my brother's class in grade school. And I talked to him a couple years ago, and he was doing some ministry thing, and talked to him again today, and he's just been completely chewed up by church systems that took advantage of him for his willingness to serve, and he's beaten up by the machine, and he's just trying to figure out how to provide for his family, but he has a heart for ministry, and so he's being taken advantage of for that, and it's really, like I said, it was almost depressing, it was heartbreaking, because it's like, there's no freedom in that.
Yeah.
When
he moved his whole family, out to the East Coast or whatever?
Since Cleveland, I think.
That's not quite the East Coast.
Close. Anyway, for me. It's a long way from home when you got five kids. Yeah. So moved all the way out there chasing some ministry dream and got chewed up and spit out and kicked to the curb and came back because he doesn't know what else to do. And it's like, man, like.
It's rough. Go work with your hands. Lead a quiet life.
I believe that when God looks at that, it's like this guy's got a willing heart and is misguided and is getting taken advantage of. And I think that makes God sad.
Yeah.
Makes me sad.
Yeah. And that thing with, praying to that, saying, God, show me what you see. It's like, don't do that willy-nilly. It's like, he's not just going to give it to you for, super bonus points or whatever.
Right. It's not just for kicks.
If he's going to show you something, it's so that it will change your heart. So, I mean, yes, ask that. Why not? It's like, why would you not want to see what God sees and feel the thing that he's feeling? But do it because you want to be changed, not because you want to experience something cool.
Well, and I think if you're going to ever have any sort of effective ministry, you have to adopt and somehow have God's eyes for the world. Like, you have to see what God sees when you look around. Otherwise, your ministry will be ineffective. You can't minister without seeing what God sees.
Well, there's multiple places in Scripture where it talks about God gives eyes to see and ears to hear. Mm-hmm. And he gives them to some and not others.
Yeah.
So it's not like everybody gets to see what God sees or hear what God hears. All right. So we were talking about the founding of these three components of Sun Ministries.
Which are?
The Opportunity Center, the Leadership Center, and the Narrow Gate. And we were talking about us all ending up – there were seven of us that ended up – well, eight if you count the German Shepherd. So seven of us that ended up.
I would say 10 if you count the German Shepherd.
She's large, but not that large.
She's almost my size.
So seven of us ended up living in this warehouse because we were trying to do what God wanted us to do, and we knew that we were all in. And then he took us through this process of poverty so that we could see what poverty was like.
Right.
And I remember that process was one of us all, each individually, trying to let go of money.
Right.
And that was hard. Mm-hmm. And
well, for me, like at that time, I had just gotten engaged to Amy. Semi-engaged.
Right.
Practically engaged. And I still had a job, so I still had income. And so I was living under this I got to make sure we go on dates. Right? I got to make sure that's really nice.
Got to do all that stuff, man.
Make sure we, whatever.
Social norms.
I got money in my wallet, so I have to make sure.
You have to woo her.
Yeah, make sure I no longer have money in my wallet, and we have to do things with it. And that went on until, for a while, until we're just like, we're living a really stupid way. Right. And then we're just like, we're just all in, we're going to share it all. And then that desire to have to go and do stuff just went all but disappeared.
Right. And I remember because Mark, who's not here tonight, was one of the last, him and Jessica were the last of the seven to come in and live in the warehouse instead of signing a new lease in their apartment out in O'Fallon. They're just like, hey, we want to do what you guys are doing. We think this is what Jesus is doing. And then he was still holding a job and they had money saved and everything. I had already stripped my IRA and everything. We were down to nothing. And God basically, he was Mark Sanford. One thing about Mark, he's always trying to desire to do what God wants. That's absolutely what he's doing all the time. It's like his heart is towards Jesus. He's been saved from a lot, and he's got a lot that he's been given privilege to do. But he came to Mark Goodwin and said, I have this money in savings, and I don't know what to do with it. And Mark said, well, what does the Bible say? Right? You tell it.
That's what I said. I said, well, what does the Bible say you should do with that? And he was like, well, I don't know. I was like, well, go look and find out and come back to me when you find out. And so it was the next day or two, he comes back and he's like, so I was reading, I was thinking, and I was praying about what to do with that money. And it says, all it says is just throw it at the apostles' feet. And I was like, okay, do you know any apostles? And he's like, Yeah. And I was like, well, there you go then. I think you got your answer.
Find where their
feet are. So he did. And what happened was we had all, I think through that experience, we realized that we weren't poor and mm-hmm. we weren't broke. We were holding on to money.
And a lifestyle. Because I remember like we would.
We were lavish.
I mean, so at this time, you know, it's like here we are starting this new thing. We're living in a warehouse. So like when we say we're living in a warehouse, what we mean is that imagine a studio apartment. So no walls, right? And seven people.
And no shower.
But it literally was a 100-something-year-old brick warehouse.
Right.
With
big windows that the wind blows right through.
Right.
And no furnace. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like we literally were living in a warehouse.
Yeah. And we're not like trying to like pat ourselves on the back at all.
No, like, it was just where we were. And then
Yeah, it was harder for some people than others. Like for me, that was not the hard part of living this lifestyle. For me, I was like, oh, wow, cool. You know, but for other people, that was hard. But mm-hmm. my hard things came much later. But yeah, so we were like, we're trying to start this new thing. So we'd work really, really long hours. And then we're like, well, let's go out for coffee tonight. You know, and so
yeah,
we'd go out for coffee and have meetings.
Spend $25.
And then it's like, how ironic that we're living in the midst of desolation and saying, here, we're coming to minister, lay down our lives, and we're just going out for coffee whenever we want to.
And you know what? That's something that all of us really enjoyed was going out for coffee. And the ironic thing is that, okay, later on we'll get to that, but we gave all that up.
Mm-hmm.
And we just said, we're going to dedicate ourselves to sharing all of our resources and making sure that everybody, you know, gets taken care of us to the best of our ability. But this lavish, expensive, non-essential stuff, we're just going to quit doing.
Right.
And that was an agreement that we all made at that point.
And, that's,
and things really
and that's
turned around after
like,
that.
That's the thing is it was the non-essential stuff.
Right.
It's like you don't realize until you stop, you don't realize how much money you spend on stuff that doesn't actually matter.
So let me just tell you the irony of that for me is that that was the thing that was like the focal point for us was we kept going out for coffee, and it's $25 a time. And it doesn't sound like that much money, but when we did it four or five times a week, we're spending $100. We still didn't have much money. But 2 years later, God gives us a coffee shop of our own.
Yep.
After we said we're willing to sacrifice that and lay it down, and that's not what's going to define us. It's what's going to define us is our willingness to share and suffer and serve Christ. Mm-hmm. And then he gives us a coffee shop in a very supernatural way, which I think is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But not as exciting as going to the commercial break
that
has Box Lunch Boy in it.
Yes.
I'm excited again. So let's do commercials and then we'll come back.
Yes, sir?
Wilson, that party in a pan lunch you got from Sun Cafe was fantastic, so I have another job for you.
Oh, thanks, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm holding a seminar for 100 people, and I need a meal that I can hand out that can be eaten at their seats. Pan Man won't work for this one, Wilson, so get on it.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and remember, Wilson, no chicken or pizza, and I want something to offer besides just sandwiches, or you're fired.
Oh, jeez, what am I going to do now? Party in a Pan Man saved me last time, but this... What's that noise?
I'm Party in a Pan Man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here once again to save the day and your job.
Wait a minute, the boss said no pan this time, dude. How could you possibly help?
It's Party in a Pan Man. Oh. Anyway, I'm going to introduce you to my sidekick. Box Lunch Boy.
He looks just like you.
It's the beard. Tell him how we can help, Box Lunch Boy.
By offering you a great assortment of box lunches from Sun Cafe. You can choose from salads, sandwiches, and wraps, packaged to go and priced right. We can even arrange delivery in a limited area.
I didn't even know this was possible. That's perfect.
Just plan ahead and order 24 hours in advance so your order will be fresh and ready. The menu is available on our website, www.suncafeandmarket.org. That's S-U-N, Cafe and Market.
You two are quite the duo.
Some might even say we're dynamic.
Welcome back, Jason. I don't know what that was, but it scared me a little bit.
It was a celebration.
You kind of looked like one of those weird, like, yard things with the inflatable, like, dancing guy.
Oh, the guys at the used car lots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Church opening?
I almost bought one of those for the cafe.
I know. We tried to find it. I wanted one bad.
So don't be surprised if one day you drive by and there's one out there.
Or if you wake up and there's one outside your window.
That'd be kind of creepy, too.
Do they make, like, desk-sized versions of those?
No, but we should. That is a Shark Tank idea you just came up with, my friend.
Ready, set, go.
Can you imagine? Just put that little propeller thing on there and let that little thing dance on your desk all day? It's better than the little metal balls that go back and forth.
That's true. When we're entertaining.
We can personalize them. We can make a Barack Obama one. We can make whoever's running against him next year, whatever.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
It would be good. We could do that.
Sell to both sides and you make more money.
That's what you do.
He can't run again, though.
No, he's not running again. I want to see if you're paying attention that we know of.
Hey, so let's do a show.
We are. We're talking about our Opportunity Center and how we got into living in shared resource
right.
and this moderate lifestyle, how God directed us. And then let's talk about what the Opportunity Center actually does. All right. So we started with two different things. We started with the wood shop
mm-hmm.
because we were trying to make this deck chair that we found on an old I don't know. Was it a...
It's a Civil War era
right.
camp chair design.
Camp chair. But we modified the design, made it okay. our own. Yeah. And then we were making bags out of recycled coffee bag, burlap, selling messenger bags, tote bags around the area. And so those were the first two things we did. We were like trying to build stuff. And hey, was anybody here a carpenter, by the way?
No.
No?
Nope. I was a loser.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Luckily, my wife could sew because she carried us, you know, for the first, you know, months that we were there by being able to actually produce something in a timely manner.
Then well, she taught us all to sew.
Yes, she did. We all ended up sewing
yep.
and just to be able to meet demand. And we were like, well, this isn't what we came to do. We didn't come here so that we could all work and do all this stuff, right? I mean, that's really, it wasn't what we came to do. But for the first year or so, God was teaching us because we needed to be able to know how to do things in order right. to teach other people how to do things. And there needed to be a foundation laid because we were not backed by any church. We were not getting tons of cash donated from people that were enamored with this new lifestyle we were leading. We were actually considered yeah. kind of weird and strange.
Well, I think if you're going to tell someone, oh, yeah, you can work with your hands and actually, you know, support yourself, you have to actually back that up somehow. So it's like it's hard to say that with any sort of authority when you're just getting like – supported somehow, but
right.
if you're actually doing the work.
So in the original plan
authority.
That God gave me, the Opportunity Center had three things that it was going to do. It was the sewing center, the wood shop, and a coffee and ice cream shop. That was in the original plan that God gave me before we decided to give up coffee and all that, you know, going out. He knew we were going to get to go do that. So here we are. What are we, 5 years later?
We're
roughly.
We're
well, it was 2009.
Yeah.
It was when we started going down there. We got the Opportunity Center donated at the end of 2009. So we opened it in May of 2010. So
yeah.
actually right now, this month,
we are five years into the five-year plan.
We've way exceeded all of that. The coffee shop is up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Sun Cafe.
And the wood shop is finding its stride and finding its product.
Getting
you just
there.
Got back from Kansas because you delivered an order to Kansas,
uh-huh.
which is awesome. I mean, yes, we have troubles with some stuff because we're not real skillful, but
nope.
people love what we do and they're compassionate towards us. Customers seem to be amicable to us fixing
yes.
things and learning things.
Well, I think people are seeing that – not everybody, but most of the customers that we've seen see that they have options.
Right.
And they have restaurants, and they have to furnish them somehow, and they hear what we're doing, and it's like, okay, I believe in that, so I'm going to support you guys. And,
yes.
you know, it's like the whole repurposed thing, because we use all wood from pallets, so that's kind of trendy right now. But it's more than that. I think they like that from sort of a social responsibility standpoint, but also they hear what we're doing and trying to employ people and change the inner city, and they're like, okay, I can get behind that. And so they've all been really gracious if we've messed stuff up, because they believe in what we're doing more than they believe in the economic transaction between the two of us.
Right. No, I agree with that. So we got our three components that were in the original plan. Now we've added lawn care and we added maintenance services, and we're able to – now that we've laid foundation, we got about a dozen missionaries, but we've also – we've got 13 or 14 employees now. At the current time, we're probably going to end up hiring four more, I think, is where we're at. So, but and then we're taking eight off the summer jobs program. So when you think about all of that, we're going to have 25 employees here 5 years later. It doesn't sound like very much,
right.
but I mean, we started with nothing. We're all working without pay. We're sharing our resources, and God has just continued to build foundation at the pace that we could handle it,
right,
I think
absolutely.
Is the most important thing, because we weren't ready for all that. You guys had never run businesses before, and you're both running businesses now.
That's true.
Right? And
yeah. and it's one of the most challenging things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way, way harder than your bachelor's degree, right?
Right. No, it's like – because this requires more than just regurgitating information. This requires critical thinking and decision making and dealing with people
and problem solving. And the whole time while you're trying to, like, to some degree live in the realm of like business management, you have to also consciously and intentionally be going to God and say, okay, God, I understand what might logically make some sense, but what are you trying to do
here? Yeah, because it's more important to me to look at the people that work in that cafe as potential people that I can minister to instead of just employees. Because I've worked in a lot of environments where I would fire somebody for some of the things that God says, let them slide, because I'm going to use that to teach you.
Yeah,
teach
them. We're training. And so if you're a business owner out there, consider this. So you're going to be unfunded. You're going to start a business out of cash flow that you've never done before. And you're going to hire people who cannot justify a job anywhere else.
Yep.
And you're going to agree to not fire them when they mess up, because you're trying to help them become employable. And as soon as they do gain the skills and you get them trained and they become employable, you're going to help them leave your employment and bring in somebody else who's unemployable. Now that you've pictured that as a business owner, that's what we do every day.
Yep.
That's so it completely goes against everything that you ever look at in the business world.
Right. And like, add to that, that you as the business owner haven't really run businesses before.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have, but then again, I can't run all five of them. I got you guys helping run all those and teaching as you go.
Yeah. So you think about the normal business world. The mindset is employ the best possible people you can to make the most money out of everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
Get well-funded, good cash flow, bankable,
mm-hmm.
and gain your market share.
We're
not doing any of that.
If somebody doesn't make you money, get rid of them and find someone that does. Right. That's the normal mindset. And for me, like that's so far away from the way I think. For me, it's like, I don't care if they make me money, if God gives me an opportunity to help them.
Yeah. And right. So here we are now, 5 years later, and we started with the Sewing Center and the Woodshop. The Woodshop is always behind because mm-hmm. we can't even make our own stuff. Still, a year after we've opened the cafe, we don't have our own tables done because we keep getting orders. And it's not like we have huge productivity there, but it is just busy all the time. And then the bags we make, we have about 65 or 70 retailers in two countries. We're doing national trade shows with that. And the thing that is fascinating to me is we didn't design it this way, but those two businesses, they bring money from outside the community
yeah.
into the community in a way that is beneficial to the community.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's turning outside revenue into payroll for people in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because the cafe does that to some degree, but not nearly as much, because there's a lot of people in the neighborhood that eat in the cafe. Circulating money back and forth through the community is beneficial also, creates jobs and, you know, entertainment and what have you. But when you can bring money in from outside the neighborhood that wasn't going to be there, then you could start to lift the neighborhood up. And that's one of the things we're trying to do with that. So before we go into the other two, I just want to know for you guys, what were some of the challenges and lessons that you learned as we walked into the Opportunity Center portion of what we do? You got about 5 minutes, and then we're going to have to do
just the Opportunity Center portion?
Just the Opportunity Center portion, because we're not going to actually be able to finish these other two portions. There's going to be too much to talk about, but I'll give you that for now.
So for me personally, like, managing is hard. It's not something that comes natural to me. I'm very task-minded, so I'm like, okay, here's my job. I'm going to do my job. Not that I can't, but then it's like, okay, so now I have to step outside of that and plan work for multiple people through the course of a week and make sure they're being productive and make sure I'm training them, which is really a constant state of laying down your life, because it's like I don't get to clock out at 4:30 or 5 or whatever and then do whatever I want. It's like I go home and I have a family and stuff, but then I also have to, okay, I got to plan my work and try to communicate that to you guys in ways that are understandable and meaningful and then be able to train people, which is, again, hard because it's like, well, I know how to do it, so I'm just going to do it. It's like, well, that's not training. That's not reproducing. That's not benefiting them at all. You know, it's like, oh, you stand here and watch me. It's like, no, I have to actually lay aside everything and train you and instruct you in a way that's encouraging and loving and not short-tempered and, you know, whatever. And so that's been the big thing for me, is just getting out of, well, let me do my job, into let me manage and care for people and train them.
What about you, Mark?
So I think probably one of the most challenging things that I've had to work on has been that it's not all about the work. Like,
yeah.
I have a tendency to get really – be a workaholic, basically, like to just work and work and work and try and get as much done as I possibly can. But sometimes it's okay for the work side of things to suffer so that you can stop what you're doing and minister to somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, it took me a long time to be okay with that, because I would look around and say, well, if I stop and do this, then this isn't going to get done. And how's that going to look? How are we ever going to be efficient and effective? And I would place the stewarding of the work part of things as more important than the stewarding of the ministry part of things, which is absolutely backwards. Mm-hmm. And so that took a long time for me to understand that it has nothing to do with the business. The business is just a catalyst. It's a midwife for the ministry to happen.
So I think I've discovered is that what I didn't see coming, I did discover, is the truth of Christianity is life. It's not church.
Yeah.
It's just life. And you have to live in such a way that family, work, ministry, everything is blended. You know, there's this thing, and it's God, family, job. I don't buy that. I think it's all supposed to be blended together in such a way that everything permeates everything, because it's the fabric of who you are.
So the other thing that I wanted to kind of add on to what I was saying is that it's amazing how when you put the spiritual things as the priority, God uses the physical aspects of the work to accomplish spiritual things.
Absolutely.
So I've noticed, especially in the kitchen, like I've noticed that kitchen is a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
God will put you there to work out all of your selfish crap.
He will
absolutely turn up the heat, literally and spiritually and emotionally. And it's a high stress environment, but it's like it challenges every part of your flesh.
Yeah.
And you can't hold on to your rights and your selfishness and be effective and fun in that kitchen. You'll be miserable if you hold on to all that stuff. So it's awesome that God puts that there as a way to work these things out of people.
Mm.
And so that's part of the other part of what I've learned is how to watch that and see where to work, like how to react to people and how to minister in that situation.
Hardest thing you've ever done?
Well, yeah, I didn't do a whole lot of anything before.
Is it the hardest thing you've ever done?
It is. And so I wanted to say, like, that guy that I was talking to earlier that I mentioned, like, he asked me, he's like, so is it just really difficult? And I said, absolutely. The most difficult thing I've ever done, if this wasn't a call of God on my life, I probably would have quit a long time ago.
Yeah. And it's like, I used to do a lot of nothing, and that was really easy. And it's like, I could quit all this and go back to having a really stupid, empty,
really
self-centered life.
It's really easy to indulge yourself.
Right. But it's like, I know every day, it doesn't matter what I'm doing, and even if I screw up really bad, I know I'm doing the thing God made me to do.
Yeah.
And that's beyond comforting. You know,
awesome.
And knowing that I'm with people that are with me spiritually, you know, and that's
the body.
There's no exchange for that.
Right. Being of one mind and one spirit, like that's a really amazing thing that I think a lot of people don't get to experience because they're not about that.
Right.
Well, we're going to go to commercial break because we have some really cool upcoming events and a couple of commercials that talk about that. So let's go to commercial break and we'll be back. Simple questions threaten the perception of a beneficial system or pyramid scheme
with its cogs and its pistons, marginalization of man, making more and more. Hey, we're back. Welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network. I never know when to start.
She points at you.
Too many parties.
I know.
I get
confused.
She does a slow point. Have you noticed that?
I get confused.
Do that, Ollie. That's what you got.
There it is.
We need to get her like a dart gun that just shoot like
dart gun.
Oh my goodness!
What, Ollie? He just needs very definitive direction. Okay, anything vague, and he's like hunting for squirrels.
Give me an inch.
In the attic, okay?
Yeah, I'll just give me an inch.
So,
and I'll have a dance party.
Dance party.
Dance party.
All right. So listen, we were talking about challenges and lessons learned in the Opportunity Center. And I think one of the things that I know we run into this with missionaries that come in and people that take the urban missions training in, maybe I had a little bit of it too, but it's pretty predominant in America, is that there's this romanticized idea of ministry. Oh, it's going to be wonderful and easy and I'm going to get to preach and somebody else is going to do all the hard work.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know. I mean, that just it isn't reality.
Yeah. So for me, sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think there's also a misconception that, I remember, when I was in youth group and a lot of youth group kids that come in on work groups or whatever, it's like missionaries are the rock stars of the Christian world. And I don't know if you've ever experienced or heard that.
No, like, where I was, rock stars were the rock stars of the Christian world.
No, like really? People are like, oh, they're missionaries, man. How cool is that? Like, I've heard that a lot. And I remember when I was in youth group, like, thinking that, oh, these guys are missionaries. They're the rock stars. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the ones that are doing the cool stuff. Oh. And so that kind of goes with what you're about to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, so as I had mentioned, I was in Kansas with our friend John, who's kind of a cowboy. He has a small farm.
He is a cowboy.
We were riding around Heston, Kansas, which is pretty. For all those who say Kansas is ugly and really flat, I've learned that only part of it's really flat. The other parts are actually very pleasant. So there. Anyway, and he was talking about living on a farm and how people kind of romanticize farm life or ranch life or whatever it is. And so that got me thinking about ministry and stuff too, and how I've seen that and might have experienced it myself at times. And I think it's true. It's like people kind of have this romantic idea of what it means to serve God or to do ministry or do inner city whatever, and it's then they get into the meat and potatoes and the blood and guts of it, to where it's a daily grind almost, and it just kind of kind of loses its luster or whatever, and they get disheartened or disencouraged or whatever it is. Discouraged. That's actually a word.
Yeah, disencouraged is not.
No.
We can use that one if you'd like.
And I thought about it in terms of like a marriage, a relationship, like the honeymoon thing. It's like, you know, after the honeymoon, like, what are you going to do? You know, it's like the honeymoon's over. So now what? Everything's not good anymore. You're just going to leave, or you're going to continue in an actual real relationship. And the same thing has to be true with your relationship with God. And you just take that further into like, so do you need activity to sustain your relationship with your spouse? Do you need things to do, movies and whatever, all this stuff, and dates and camping trips and soccer practice and kids and all this stuff? And what do you do when the kids are grown up and they move out?
Time together would be nice.
Yeah. You know, it's like, and the same thing's true with God. It's like, what do you do when you don't have somebody else giving you activity? Or what do you do whenever the thing that you romanticized is just now a daily reality, and there's hard work involved and there's more sacrifice or whatever it is?
Well, yeah, I think part of the issue is how ministry is presented to the majority of Americans. Yeah. Is that thing that happens on Sunday is ministry, and those people that are up there on the stage are ministers.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you know, I could be the big dog and up there doing the, you know, preaching and everybody will love me or whatever. One, I remember the comedian used to talk about no kid ever fantasizes in their backyard about being Pope. They,
right.
They want to be Babe Ruth, or they want to be a great baseball player, yeah, A-Rod, but nobody's back there going, yeah, he's the best Pope ever. Right? But there is that romanticized idea of, wow, I could be that. That's ministry. Now, if you could just preach like that guy, I could do ministry.
If I can make my videos, my DVDs.
Well, I think it's just
that it is not ministry.
No, and it robs you of the joy of walking with God. Mm-hmm. And with fellow believers and a body and a new life that's actually new, not just something added to all your other hopes and dreams.
Because God has put in you everything you need to have a fulfilling ministry without being on that stage.
Right.
Without even being a part of that organization. Because the Holy Spirit is the thing that gives you meaningful ministry.
Oh, my goodness.
And the gifting that flows through you from Him is used best when working in conjunction with other complementary gifts in a body. And I think so few people experience that. So they're lost in space out there wondering, you know, is this all there is? That's why you're seeing the growing number of people leaving the church, because they haven't figured out. Once you get your gifting working and Holy Spirit's flowing through you and you feel that intimacy with God, you don't care if you're in church or not.
Right.
Because you already have your relationship solidified. You don't need an event on a week to do that.
Well, and it doesn't take them long to realize that they're not getting it there.
Well, either that or everybody has figured out that they are getting it. Maybe they are. Maybe 46% of the Americans or 43% have figured out, and they got the Spirit flowing through them, and they realize they don't need the once-a-week event in order to have intimacy with God. But I'm hoping what they're doing is finding other believers to gather with, because they need to do that. So we have one more song to do, right?
I did. And so it kind of follows that romanticizing thing, because it is by Robbie C. Band, and it is a song called Up to the Mountain, which was written by a lady whose name I forgot, but it is based on the last speech given by Martin Luther King Jr. And I like it because I've liked it for a while, but it's basically, you know, so everyone's kind of familiar with Martin Luther King, right? This massive, you know, call on his life, whatever, however you want to look at it. Either way, he had given himself to a vision, right, and a mission, and it cost him his life. And there's a weight that comes with giving yourself away, with leadership, with serving, and sometimes it is really hard. And so this song talks about this kind of weight of following a passion that's real, that's, you know, that's bigger than you. It's not about your own fulfillment. And it's him basically expressing the thing, the truth that he's probably not going to live to see the end of it. He's not going to live to see the fruits, and he's understanding this. But at the same time, he's voicing that his rest comes from God. And the same thing is true for people in ministry. It's like, yeah, there's a weight, there's a heaviness, because you're giving yourself up. You're laying down your life. For some people, sometimes they don't even care. They're like, okay, cool, I'll take that, whatever it is, see a peace, you know. And you have to live together in that and live with your family in that and lead your family in that. And sometimes it's hard, but you have to look to God and say, okay, God's, where's my rest? And it has to always be in you and in my brothers and sisters and this thing that you're doing. So that's why I wanted to play this song, and, you know, talking about not romanticizing ministry and realizing that there's an effect.
There's a cost.
Yeah, there's a cost, but it's not, God's just not there to take everything from you.
No, right? But Jesus paid a price, and he expects that we have a price to pay as well in order to participate. You can't. Jesus doesn't have anything to do with frivolity.
Right.
It's really what it comes down to. He doesn't have anything to say to the frivolous man
other
than repent.
Yes. So let's hear the song.
Do the song.
I went up to the mountain because you asked me to.
It's gonna cost us everything to follow one Lord and King. True love endures everything to be free.
The Resistance is hosted by Dr. Terry Goodwin, Mark Sanford, Jason Callahan, and Mark Goodwin. Our theme music is The Resistance by Josh Carrolls and is licensed by Marmoset Music. This episode of The Resistance Radio Show was originally broadcast live on KXEN 1010 AM in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you for being a part of The Resistance. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from our feed at theresistanceradioshow.wordpress.com. Find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church, or on our website at DiscipleDrivenChurch.org. To learn more about our missionary work in the inner cities of America, please visit sunministries.org. You can email us directly at terry@discipledrivenchurch.org.